This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
The Presidencies of the United States is a proud member of the Evergreen Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Presidential Podcast Friendsgiving Spectacular. I'm Kenny Ryan of the Abridged Presidential Histories Podcast, and I'm joined by Howard Dory of Plotting Through the Presidents, Alicia of Civics and Coffee, and Jerry Landry of Presidencies of the United States. And we're here celebrating Friendsgiving in September because we recorded this in advance. Thank you, everybody, for joining me. Well, everybody, let's go around and say, hey, how are you doing, Howard?
I'm doing pretty well. I'm excited. I'm really happy to be doing this. I'm happy to be outsourcing 75% of this episode. Very exciting.
It's true. What we did is each of us wrote one question for each other participant, and we'll be going through asking each other questions and having a conversation. Alicia, happy to have you here too.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I adore all of you guys, so I'm happy to be included. I even took a much needed break from graduate school homework to be here. So let's do it.
Oh, wow. We are honored. Thank you. And I hope like at the end of this, you were like, that was a nice relaxing break and not like now I need another break.
No, it will be. I have no doubt. The three of you, I'm sure I will be laughing for days. So.
And then Jerry, thank you for joining me. Jerry, those of us who are listening can't see this, but he's the one who actually looks like he has a graduate degree number of books behind him. So yes. Looks very official over there. Thanks for joining us, Jerry.
I try to be officially official. But Howard, I did have to wear this shirt just for you.
Yes.
Hey, he's got the one of the plotting shirts on.
And of course, it's Harrison.
Yes.
Of course, it's Harrison.
William Henry Harrison for a good time.
What's the shirt say for everybody's benefit?
So the shirt says, William Henry Harrison, for a good time, not a long time.
Howard Dory sells fantastic shirts. He offers really great merchandise. So everybody listening, because this show is going to be on each of our feeds.
Yes.
So if you listen to any of our shows, you're going to hear this. And we'd all encourage you to then go check out all the other shows. And then buy some like really cool swag from Howard. Like I am who comes up? That's what my question should have been for you, Howard. Who comes up with your t-shirt designs? I gotta ask.
I come up with the initial design, and then I find designers to like execute the visual elements of it. But if the titles and stuff like that come from my twisted brain,
I love your twisted brain, Howard.
Oh, thank
very
you.
Impressive.
I welcome. Have the shirt that says "Facts are strange things," and it's in the stranger.
I'm the only one who doesn't have a shirt. I need to fix that.
We'll figure out a way to rectify that. We'll figure out a way.
Cool. So let's dive into the questions. I'll start with a question for Jerry, and then we'll be going through round robin. So, Jerry, I understand you've already read a bio of every president before starting your podcast. So you're miles ahead of the rest of us. Who is your favorite president and why? And also, who is your least favorite president and why?
So, and first of all, and Kenny, I wanted to thank you so much for bringing us together in this. It's always such a pleasure to talk to each of you, and to have three wonderful friends here together is just, this has made my weekend. So, thank you.
Thank you so much.
And so, yes, I did. And it's part of how I got into the podcast is that I started a presidential biography read project. And so I did systematically read a biography of each president in order. I tried to make it a full-length biography, so of their entire life, not just their presidency or just one aspect of their life. And so once I was getting towards the end of that, it was like, well, what do I do with this? And luckily my husband had the idea and asked me the question, well, have you thought about making a podcast? And, you know, 6 years later, here I am. But yeah, and it's always so, it's tough to rank them because there are certain things, there are certain aspects about some of the presidents that I like more than others. And for the favorite president, it's pretty cliche, but Lincoln. And the reason is you look at the situation and you look at who Lincoln was. And if you have somebody who is the least likely person that you would think of to be able to take the nation that is disintegrating, yeah, and be able to pull it back together, to be able to coordinate with armies in the field, to be able to keep the economy afloat, to be able to keep the domestic situation under control, to be able to manage foreign policy in the midst of all these crises. And, oh, by the way, it leads to the end of slavery, which generations upon generations of American leaders had kicked down the road because they were like, oh, well, it can't be done. We're not sure how this can happen. Lincoln is probably at towards the bottom of your list of people that you would initially think of, this is the guy, but that was the guy, you know, and yes, he was flawed. And yes, he had problems. And yes, some of his policies are very questionable. However, the achievements, I think, arguably, and especially under the circumstances, I mean, it's fascinating to study Lincoln and also to get the personal accounts of him and how he managed the politics and just trying to keep things going day by day. So I'd say that he's probably my favorite president. So for least favorite presidents, I will go ahead and leave more of the modern presidents out of the discussion just because I'm not opening that can of worms.
Oh, come on.
Coward.
But in terms of other presidents, and it's funny because they come so close together, but Andrew Johnson was just, talk about night and day presidencies and personalities and achievements, you know, more admirable achievements versus Johnson that, oh my gosh, Andrew Johnson's probably the least favorite outside of modern context. And I'll just leave it there.
Very delicate of you.
I've learned diplomacy over the years from the presidents.
Coming up on 5 Minute News, I'm Anthony Davis. You might think it's partisan because maybe it's critical of one side or the other, but it's not. It's just the truth. And I think that's also something that's kind of unusual for Americans listening to the radio or to podcasts, because the news landscape in the States has been so partisan for so many decades. So 5 Minute News is verified, truthful, independent, unbiased, and essential world news daily.
So Alicia, in the course of all the topics that you've covered to date, do you have one that stands out as a what-if moment where you feel that the course of history could have gone better than it did? And if so, what was that moment?
Yeah, so I had to look through my catalog because I was like, well, yeah, no, there's totally a couple of moments from history that I would be like, ooh, what if that happened? Or what if that went differently? But if I had to pick, I would definitely want to explore what would have happened had Shirley Chisholm actually made it farther along in the process, either as president or vice president. I mean, preferably as president. I just, you know, again, you look at the current politics of today and the current issues of representation in federal office. And I don't wonder if some of that would have been mitigated or negated had she been successful in her presidential run in 1972. I thought she was pretty powerful as a representative. She kind of didn't take any flack from anybody. And then she also, you know, she had some pretty good policies that in 1972 probably weren't very popular, but looking back now, you know, we have the luxury of 2020 hindsight vision. You know, she wanted to legalize marijuana. She was, you know, really supportive of gay rights. She wanted the passage of the Equal Rights Amendment. She was against the war in Vietnam. She was really focused on anti-poverty measures. She just had this really robust and inclusive thought and approach in her policymaking that I would have loved to see her as president and see kind of what that would have led and meant for generations of Americans.
And well, in case any of us doesn't know who that is, can you elaborate real quick? Who is Shirley? Not that I'm one of those people.
Yeah. So Shirley Chisholm was the first Black U.S. representative. She represented a district in New York, in Brooklyn, and she just a brilliant, smart lady. She served in Congress, I want to say, until the 80s, and then in 1972 decided to do a launch a bid for president of the United States, and didn't make it very far. She got, I think, like 40 votes, nothing to anywhere near what you needed to be to qualify and to classify, and the establishment very much was against her participating in any kind of debates, just really wanting to put keep herself out of there. And she always just said, you know, they're not going to let you have a seat at the table, so bring yourself a chair. And I just, you know, just absolutely adore her. So very, very strong woman from history that I greatly admire.
And she's just her life and her career. It's just so fascinating always to study about her. And like you, Alicia, you really just have to wonder, had she been able to really, if she hadn't been shut out as much as she was, if she had really been able to get her messaging out there, it could have shifted so much. But
yeah,
now she remains a hero for us.
Yeah, and I think I look at kind of the microcosm, which is her little district in Brooklyn, right? And the anti-poverty measures that she did and the school initiatives that she proposed. She very much kind of proposed the idea of kitchen table issues. I know Kamala Harris really drew on Shirley Chisholm's record and her own presidential bid when she was running for office in 2020. And so, you know, she was very effective in her district. And it's, you know, pretty big, sweeping metropolis, Brooklyn. And I don't wonder what that would have meant on a larger federal scale, right? Because she also wanted to integrate federal office and she really felt that representation mattered. And how can you legislate for a diverse country if the tenets of government aren't diverse and representative of the populace? And I just think there is a lot to that that we probably could have benefited from back then. Just a smidge.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing that, Alicia. That was really interesting.
Thank you. That was a really good question. So my first question is going to be for Howard. And so, Howard, you tell some of the most irreverent and hysterical tales from history, which I absolutely adore. And I love kind of your deep, deep dives on all of the different primary documents that you do. So I'm curious, what's been your favorite primary source that you've used for one of your episodes?
Well, I mean, first of all, I have to mention, by the way, thank you. That's very kind, very kind. I'm going to replay just that part over and over. I have to mention the diaries of John Quincy Adams, just because it's such a great primary source from the time he was a child up through almost his death. And he talks about everybody. He talks about what he did. He talks about what he thinks. And he there's no holds barred for the most part. He really just kind of lets loose. And it's just a great sort of historical and gossipy source. But when I think about my favorite weird, obscure primary source that you could sort of call primary, I think about this book that was written in 1859. John Quincy Adams died in 1848. In 1859, purportedly, he wrote an autobiography, From Heaven, in which he used electricity to channel his spirit into the hands of a medium who then dictated this 400-page book that is just, it's fascinating from a paranormal standpoint. it's got everything you want in early spiritualism with seances and electricity and spirits floating. But it's also this abolitionist book that is very anti-slavery. And there's even a section where George Washington kind of taps JQA out and says, hey, let me take over this guy's hands. I want to write a chapter. And he laments his role in slavery. And but that part of the book where George Washington talks about regretting slavery was actually printed in newspapers across the country. Like, this odd little spiritualist book had an impact beyond just people who were part of this circuit. And as a little present to myself, I located a copy of this original book from 1859. And it is, I mean, I love it. It goes off the rails in the end. There's a section where...
Oh, just the end. The whole thing. Yeah, yeah.
I'm with it. I'm with it. I'm with it until about page 400. But there's a section where just everybody up in heaven comes and signs their own name in their own handwriting. And some of it is in languages unknown. And it's just like the work that went into this. Like, I'll show you. So you can kind of see, like, these are signatures of all kinds of folks. So it's definitely a favorite because it checks all my boxes.
All those dead people's signatures are better than mine is. Howard, when are you going to open yourself up to be a medium for the sequel?
You know, I put it out there every night. The candles are lit. You know, it just hasn't happened yet. I feel like slowly I'm becoming a cranky old man, so maybe... It's so subtle, you know.
That's how they're speaking through you. You are not the cranky old man. It's your forefathers.
It might be,
and of course you would be channeling JQA. So there you go.
You know,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
I want to see that pitch to the literary agent. Like, I don't have a book for you. John Quincy Adams does.
Yeah,
and oh, by the way, there's a guest appearance by Washington.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep.
It's crazy. I mean, John Hancock is like his handler, teaching him how to like take people over. It's a ride. It is a ride.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
That was a great question and answer. Thank you, Howard.
Yes. So my first question is for Kenny. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You've had some great guests on your show. So who was someone that you really enjoyed talking with? And I want to know if you were as nervous as I was when we first started doing interviews on our show, because you seem very relaxed and conversational. I say that now as you're literally eating an apple during this podcast recording. just want to know more about the interviews and kind of your favorite and how you go about them.
And of course, it's not me, so you don't have to say that I was your favorite guest.
Well, listen, you're definitely making the list. Like, I could not possibly come on here and not mention I've interviewed Alicia, and she was one of my faves. But I have, first of all, thank you for the good question, Howard. I appreciate it.
Yeah, Alicia wrote it for me. It's not true.
Well played. Well played. There have been so many good interviews. Some of my favorites included Eric S. Yellen. He was a very recently interview on Woodrow Wilson and racism in the federal government. There was a great interview with John Barry on Wilson and the Spanish flu epidemic. Lindsay Shervinsky, who I think we've all corresponded with her. She's always a delight.
Yeah.
Harold Holzer is, I think, a personal favorite. He always comes on to talk about presidents in the media. And as a former journalist, like, I especially geek out on that topic. And Alicia's been on before. Alicia's great. Yes. We had a great talk with Alicia. But that said, I think my favorite guest I've had on was University of Kentucky professor Mark Summers, author of The Era of Good Stealings. I mean, just right there, fantastic book title. And he was a wonderful storyteller. He had so many great anecdotes that really kind of brought to life that time period that I hadn't encountered before. And our interview on Grover Cleveland and the Gilded Age was just really fun. So that's the first part of your question. Second part of your question, nerves before interviews. So I used to be a journalist. And so interviewing is something that I'm very familiar with doing. I've gone into interviews with people who were hostile, with people who were shy, with people who were nervous. I once had a story where a source who had every reason to be upset with me said, "Meet me at the construction site at midnight."
Huh.
And, you know, I went and talked to him and he gave me some documents for a story. And that was nice. So, you know, when you've done like those kind of interviews, or really the most nerve-wracking interview was post-game press conferences after a bowl game where you have all the media in the room waiting to ask a coach a question. You know you're on ESPN. Their cameras are in the back. And you're just like trying to keep your question in front of you and keep track of other people because you don't want to be the idiot who asks a question that was already asked. Like, that is the most nerve-wracking place you can be. So, like, all those experiences helped kind of prepare me for this, for interviews. And I just keep it relaxed and conversational. And I'm just generally curious about people. And it helps that I have full editorial control.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, no, the editorial control is important because my first interviews, if they were not edited, there was literally me asking a question, getting the best answer in the world, silence, me saying, cool, and moving on to the next question. It was awful. But with the magic of editing, it's a seamless conversation. And yeah, so I hear that.
Absolutely. Absolutely, which we are heavily doing right now, as I say cool after every conversation. Cool. All right, I'm up next. I've got a question for Alicia. Alicia, when you're picking topics for your episode, what are you looking for? What's the criteria that makes you say, this should be an episode, but that shouldn't be?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think I kind of have to tie it back to the reason why I started Civics and Coffee. So for my listeners, you know this pretty much, but for everybody else, they might not be. I really wanted to tie history. I've heard a lot from enough adults in my life that history is quote unquote boring. And I think, No, you haven't engaged with the history that hooks you yet. I think part of that obviously is representation and how history has been taught for years and years and years, right? There's been a lot of this reverence for dead old white men. But, you know, I was very lucky in that I had an eighth grade history teacher, shout out to Mr. Lamb, who very much was very derisive, very condescending about the founding fathers. And he made them real for me. And that really, I was like, oh, they're actual human beings and they burp too. Okay, this is fascinating. Let me dive into this. So when I am trying to figure out, you know, what I want to talk about on the podcast, you know, I want to definitely tie in stories that I think, quote unquote, everybody knows, right? Everybody knows about George Washington. Everybody knows about, hopefully, John Adams. I mean, Thomas Jefferson, I guess, Louisiana Purchase. The big sweeping stories, right? I think that's important. You want to cover all of that. But I also want to find the things that maybe they didn't get taught in high school, right? Like, I'm embarrassed to admit that I did not necessarily realize that George Washington used the powers of the federal government to try to track down an escaped slave. And so I learned that with learning the story of Oney Judge. And so I want to pick those pieces of the history, right? I want to talk about those. I want to explore those because I feel like when you are telling that kind of other side or the history from below to a certain extent, you are making it more representative and have a greater likelihood of getting somebody to be curious. And I always hope at the end of my episodes that somebody turns off the episode and they go, gosh, I want to know more about that. And they go and explore on their own. That's why I keep them short. I don't go into beautiful deep dives like Jerry does. But I just want to make sure that like I've piqued interest. So that's part of the reason why, how I pick an episode. And then also, you know, as a woman, I look for the women. I do. I look for the stories and the people and the events that maybe didn't get a lot of cred or ink, as it were. So I'm looking for indigenous stories. I'm looking for women in history and their impact, such as the abolitionist movement, right? We heard about William Lloyd Garrison and Frederick Douglass, and they're great, powerful men, and they should be, you know, celebrated. However, there's Lucretia Mott and Elizabeth Cady Stanton and the Grimke sisters and all of these other women that aren't as familiar to people. And so that's kind of when I'm picking my episodes and trying to determine what I want to talk about. That's where I go.
That's all. You do a fantastic job of it too. Like love the diverse cast of topics and the like light dives that you do. They do leave me being like, oh, that's really great. Like I learned and I'm curious to learn more. So you nail it.
And
thank you.
I'm curious if you guys are kind of jealous of her freedom to just jump around and not be in any way related to a president. Because I'm already going off the rails talking about founders and like presidential adjacent stuff. And Alicia, you've just got so much stuff to choose from, and I'm so jealous of that freedom.
I'm like daunted by it, you know, because I'm like, oh man, if I just have to try and find things that are cool, like what if my things aren't really cool? Let me just do the presidents, you know, like in order. That way nobody can judge me like, dude, Kenny, Millard Fillmore was dumb. I'd be like, well, he was next in line.
See,
when... I will say you guys are very fortunate in that there is like a built-in audience. There are people that love presidential history. They love everything that they can get about presidential history. So there is that perk to it. It can be a little stifling, I guess, if you want to explore other things. But you can do like Jerry does, which he kind of created his own little niche about other aspects of presidential history that are presidential adjacent, actually, since it's my turn, maybe I'll ask Jerry about that.
Hey.
So, Jerry, a while back, you introduced a pretty cool secondary part to your show where you review cabinet members and determine who deserves a quote-unquote seat at the table. So have you considered doing something similar to other parts of the administration, like vice presidents, for example?
Well, and thank you for that question. So first of all, for any listeners who may not know about this special series that's a part of my podcast, it's called A Seat at the Table. And basically in each episode, I invite on fellow podcasters. And if you've ever listened to a Rexy pod like Pontifax or Totalis Rankium or, of course, the originator, Rex Factor, then it's kind of that similar format. So most of the episode is me sharing research that I've done on that cabinet member's life and career. And then at the end, we kind of have some ranking rounds, but we use that as a framework to be able to really talk about their legacy in a few broad categories. And so it has honestly been fascinating because it was one of those things as I was going through the initial narrative episodes, I would hit points where it was like, oh, well, I'd like to dive into William Bradford's life, but then that would kind of take me away from the lens of presidential history. So I need to keep things moving. Let's just move on. So it's been nice to be able to come back to some of these subjects that I was fascinated about and be able to do a bit of a dive in. But then also it's like, okay, then you get more topics that you're starting to get interested in. It's like, well, can I justify that? It's funny because whenever we had April Fool's Day this year, my April Fool's was, oh, well, I'm abandoning the presidencies of the United States. I'm starting the vice presidencies of the United States. Let's get away from the presidents. Who needs them? And I honestly had people interested in learning more about the vice presidents.
I mean,
and if time was not a factor, I probably would start a new special series going into vice presidents or, you know, Supreme Court justices. And, you know, maybe someday I'm hopeful. I'm cautiously optimistic that someday I'll be able
to vote. We got all the time in the world, Jerry.
I know, right? Well, I'm planning on cyborg implants to be able to get through all the presidencies to begin with. So, you know, might as well work that in.
Yeah,
it's interesting.
I was just going to say, there's like a Sufjan Stevens element of like, I'm going to write an album about every state in the country. Here's my album, Illinois. And I don't know that he's come out with any more. And that's a big goal.
Exactly.
I mean, the fact that I've actually gotten to the Madison presidency after 5 years, and I think I'm over 150 episodes, I'm taking that as a triumph. And I'm still going.
Are you going to have a Madison episode titled Madman or something like that? Like, just throwing that out there.
Ooh, I should. Yeah. but it's so fascinating because, you know, folks were like, oh, well, we need to learn more about the vice presidencies and what they were doing as vice president. And honestly, the answer for most of them, especially in the early days, is, well, they were sitting in the Senate. They were presiding over the Senate. They were bored that they were presiding over the Senate, and they were glad to not be vice president anymore.
No, here's what you need to do. You need to do an episode that is just all the quotes from vice presidents about how worthless the vice presidency is.
Yes.
Because you can, like, there are some great quotes, some funny jokes in there, you know. Yeah, that's what you need. That's what I think that whole it would be just like 30 minutes and you're like covered, done.
Yeah, pretty much. But all right, yeah, it'll be fascinating to see. And, actually have a vice president actually doing something in an upcoming episode. So tuned, everybody. I mean, it's an exciting time. So I think it is my turn to ask a question. So I am going to ask a question of Howard.
Oh.
So Howard.
Yes.
What would you say has been the topic in presidential history that you've most enjoyed covering thus far, either on the blog or on the podcast? And for those out there, Howard actually began with a blog that I started following pretty early on. And whenever he went into podcasting, I was like, oh my gosh, finally, yes.
So something that I've really enjoyed diving into, like I love digging into stories that might be just myths and finding out, like, did this really happen? Because so much of early presidential trivia is just bunk. Like, it's you'll be told the story, this crazy thing happened in 1790. And what really happened was somebody made this up in 1880. And it just becomes like this historical fact that ends up on a Snapple cap. But one story I was really fascinated in was the story that John Quincy Adams believed in the theory that the Earth was hollow and wanted to fund an expedition to go to the center of the Earth and establish trade with mole people. This sounds ridiculous.
We were always
right?
looking for new trading partners.
Yeah. You know, he was a diplomat. Feasible, right? But this story, it just sounded kind of ridiculous. John Bell of the Boston 1775 blog, which is just a fantastic blog, he dug into it a bit. He found that it seemed like the origin came from cracked.com, this article in the early or mid 2000s. So I actually tracked down that author of the Cracked article, and I said, hey, where'd you get this idea? Like, where did this come from? Is it possible you just misinterpreted the word visionary, which you thought meant, I love the hollow earth theory, this guy's a visionary, but really it meant, this man is visionary and has a disturbed imagination, because words change meanings. And he ended up reestablishing a connection with Cracked, because he hadn't written there for like 10 years. And they published an apology to John Quincy Adams. And even though this started in Cracked, it blew up to other websites and magazines, and Smithsonian Magazine even had an article about John Quincy Adams' belief in the hollow earth. And I was able to contact them through all of this, and they rewrote that article and basically apologized for their role in propagating the myth, which is just incredible to me. And it's a fun story, and it seems harmless enough, but it was actually being used to kind of say, hey, you know, presidents have believed in crazy conspiracy theories for a long time, or John Quincy Adams was an idiot. Yeah. Both of those things, which I really didn't like the idea of. So it was very cool to kind of dive into this, share the story with people, get some things changed, and go on this mini little, very niche crusade that's really been pretty rewarding and awesome. So I love stories like that.
And what's really amazing is John Quincy Adams can write thank you. And he can write back.
That's true. Yeah. I'm going to go to sleep tonight with a pen in my hand and wake up and see if he's had anything to say.
Yeah, it's probably going to be a thank you.
It might be. It might be.
Thank you for defending my legacy.
Yes.
But awesome story, though. Seriously.
I love digging into it. So I've got a question for Alicia.
Okay.
You, like me, love horror movies, and if you could set a horror movie in any historical time period, when would it be, and what real historical figures might make good characters in this movie?
I loved this question so much that I bugged the crap out of my husband as we were kind of driving down to dinner the other night. And I was like, okay, I have so many options because I don't like, you know, part of me wants to put it in the 80s just because I love that slasher era of the late 70s and the 80s. But I was like, okay, but that's been done. And then I was like, okay, but maybe we can do it in like the 50s. But I was like, I don't know. So I finally landed on the kind of that Industrial Revolution, late 19th, early 20th century, and which actually fits in perfectly because then we could use H.H. Holmes.
Oh.
So I've done an episode on him before, did a couple of episodes on him actually. And so the legend of him is much more robust than the actual facts of his case. However, being that it's a horror movie, let's just make him a crazy mad inventor who really wanted to test his new technology on people just to see what the impacts would be, like torture devices. That's kind of where I went with it, wanting to bring H.H. Holmes into it. And then, you know, as a completely, totally different aside, I was like, maybe Jane Addams could be the final girl.
Oh, love it. Chicago, so right? Whole random. House, is that what I'm thinking?
Yes.
Oh, see, my God.
It tied all together.
I'm ready. Take my money.
Yeah, I'm ready to green light this. Let's go.
Yeah.
Okay, so my question is for Kenny. If you could turn any of the administrations you've researched so far into an epic soap opera type miniseries, which one would it be and why?
Well, this is fun. And similar to the question you just got, too. So John Quincy Adams and Chester Arthur are both really tempting because they have amazing stories, but their actual administrations are kind of lackluster. So for a miniseries about an administration, inauguration day to the end of term, I think I'd have to say George Washington would actually make a really great miniseries. It would be a great reminder of how weak the United States once was. Mm. You know, being at the mercy of all these global powers who are fighting each other and we're just trying to stay out of it and getting caught in the middle. It would be a reminder of how George Washington may be deified now, but he was often vilified back then. And Thomas Jefferson would just make a great villain if you, you know, portrayed him the right way.
Yes.
But you have threats on every front. You have like a whiskey rebellion. You got stuff going on at home. You got France and Great Britain, big powers. I think that if you're going to take one administration from start to end and really explore all the crazy things, like that's a great one. And so many great characters too. We get Hamilton, we get Jefferson, we get all these people. Honorable mention.
Okay.
To William Henry Harrison, who would make a great Pixar short.
Okay.
He would be like the first 5 minutes of Up and then just die at the end in the White House. Like it would be, you know, you'd be like, oh my God, Pixar did it again.
Now, see, I could probably make it into a 12-episode miniseries.
You could do like 24. It could be in real time. It could be in real time, his whole administration.
There you go. Yeah, a 31-episode, 24, there you go, 31 season, perfect.
Yes.
But I also have to be honest, I would love to see someone do like a Game of Thrones-level Presidencies of the United States TV show. You know, something with like 40-plus seasons where all these different characters and people, they show up, they develop, you see how they change, you see what they're like in front of a crowd at home, you know, they die, you see how their policies are carried out and how it affects, you know, people around the country, around the world, and you just see history carried forward on like a grand scope. Like that would be awesome. So that's my like other thing that I'm just like, somebody please make that because I would watch the heck out of that. That'd be cool.
History Channel, if you're listening, please stop talking about aliens and maybe look at Kenny's idea.
There you go. In the meantime, there's C-SPAN, which can be pretty fascinating.
Yeah.
It's true. All right, let's see. So my next question is for Howard. Howard, you cover a lot of really fun, meaningful, or tragic stories in compelling detail. What is your favorite presidential fail and why?
Oh, first of all, thank you. That's awesome. We try to cover things that incorporate all those aspects. And one story that I think kind of does, it's definitely a fail. It's definitely tragic. There's a fun element to it because it sounds ridiculous. And I think it should be more meaningful than it is. is the story of Thomas Jefferson's killer ram. The fact that Jefferson was, he was obsessed with cultivating the best wool in the United States for his home country of Virginia. And so he had sheep on the White House lawn, and he was gifted this little ram that had four horns, and two of them stuck straight out like deadly points. And he was given plenty of notice that this ram was dangerous. It attacked a boy that was the shepherd, and then it attacked a Revolutionary War veteran who had come looking for a pension and instead got rammed. And then there's a story that it actually also attacked an enslaved girl that would have been the child of one of his workers there. Hard to substantiate that, but it sounds like something that could easily be covered up. But Jefferson didn't do anything about it. He knew this ram was dangerous, and he didn't do anything until after it actually killed a 9-year-old boy on the White House lawn who was just crossing the lawn after school on his way home, and the boy was impaled. He suffered. He eventually died. Jefferson sent the family $25, which might seem like a lot back then, but when you think about, he also paid $200 for a giant wheel of cheese, it doesn't seem like so much anymore. And then Jefferson, he was just so kind of myopic in his obsessions that he didn't realize the consequences things like that might have on other people. And I think that sheds a lot of light on his personality in general. And I think that's a big fail. I think if something like that happened today and you could prove, like, what did the president know and when did he know it, type of thing, it would be a big deal. But back then it was just, Jefferson and his silly little ram.
I just want to say,
didn't they try to make a big issue out of, like, President Biden's dog, right? He bit somebody. So can you imagine if he had a history of biting and they found it? I mean, it would be all over the news.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That would be everywhere.
Careful. You're about to start a rumor that President Biden's dog killed somebody.
Oh, and you know that would go.
Yeah, I just want to say I'm now inspired for that miniseries of the George Washington presidency. Every time you cut to Thomas Jefferson, he's going to be like Dr. Evil in a lair, with, like, feeding this goat or this ram.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
And it's perfect.
Someday I'll lure Hamilton across the lawn and the ram will get him.
He would be holding his little pet mockingbird dick and, like, gently petting it. And yeah, that would be. Yeah.
Cool. You're a power.
Oh, yeah. All right. So, Kenny, I got a question for you. Wait, no, I don't.
Wait, you want to ask me a question?
I don't have a question.
Question for Jerry.
I got it. All right. Jerry, I got a question for you now. We've talked about how in depth you're going, how many episodes you've done on just, 3.1 administration so far. You love research and it shows. And what I want to know is, what's your research process like, and how do you stop yourself from getting lost in rabbit holes and actually move on to the writing and producing of episodes?
I was supposed to say, I love that question.
So, yes, I do love research. That's been beyond interacting with folks, fellow podcasters, listeners. That is one of the joys of doing this podcast, is being able to really dive into the research, trying to make sense of things. And especially, there's so many points in presidential history that have been covered ad nauseum, and trying to bring a new lens to it, trying to bring a new perspective, or poking holes in it and questioning, okay, well, they say every source says this happened, but what's the real source for this? So it does become, it's almost like a puzzle for me. It's trying to put together, or when you've got something that you know happened and everybody admits happened, but nobody really goes into detail, and trying to piece together, okay, well, what are the details of this? So really with each presidency, I start, and I actually have a whiteboard that I use. I previously just used little note cards that I would tape to the wall. Very fancy. Very fancy. I've now got an actual whiteboard that I start to just put events that I know I want to cover in the series. And I usually go about a year out. And so as I'm going through, I'm like, okay, I'll start erasing. Okay, I've covered that. I've covered that. And then I keep refreshing as I'm going along. What keeps me from going off on tangents and getting in the rabbit holes? Because I also, you know, after I do that, then I go through my books and I'm like, okay, I need this one and this one and this one and this one. And then I just stack them up. And as I'm going along, I start to think, oh, well, I remember so-and-so said something about this, or I need to find something about this. I think it should be in here. And what keeps me from going down too many rabbit holes? I mean, I go in depth, but I always try and keep the lens of what does this mean for presidential history? What does it mean for this administration? And that's when I start to pull myself back. Now, I'm constantly thinking ahead. So even now I'm starting to think of the Monroe presidency. I'm starting to think of what I'm going to do with JQA, but that's kind of in the back burner. But what one of the things that I've thought of from the very beginning, even the Washington presidency, was how am I going to cover the War of 1812 from a presidential lens and not have it become the War of 1812 podcast? And so that's my current dilemma. I think that I've got a strategy planned out for it, but we'll have to wait and see. I feel like right now my listeners are just having to trust me whenever I'm talking about Spanish vice royalties and Tecumseh and Tenskwatawa and Fletcher v. Peck and the New Madrid earthquake, that yes, this all does fit into U.S. presidential history and the Madison administration. I'm going to bring it all together. I promise. Just trust me. But this one is, it's all over the place. But it is all still within that lens of presidential history. So, and that's the exciting part of it. You know, it becomes, it's not just about one president. It's not just about the individual holding the office. Yeah. It's about so many more people and events. Mm-hmm. And even at the beginning, the story spanned the globe. You know, there were influences from so many disparate places across the world that were impacting what was happening in the Washington administration. So, you know, it's a complex story. It's a very human story. And that's what I try and do one episode at a time. So,
how big is the whiteboard?
Is anyone else feeling inadequate in their preparation? Or is it just me?
Yeah, I've got like a series of emails to myself and notes on my phone. I don't know if that counts as prep.
You know, the thing I'm thinking, I had just recently read about Truman, and it feels like, you know, as complex as American history was, it quadruples after all of a sudden the United States is a global superpower, and every little problem in the world is on the president's plate. So good luck when you get to that.
That's for future cyborg me to figure out.
Yeah. We'll help with that.
Well, and it's funny. So this is actually a perfect segue into the question that I have for Kenny. So Kenny, how far ahead do you normally prep to start your research and prep for each president? Are you like me, always thinking a few ahead, or are you just focused really on one at a time?
Yeah, good question. I try to stay pretty far ahead. So right now, I'm still putting out episodes on Wilson. I am reading about Eisenhower, who's a good 30 years later. But I am writing my Harding episode still right now. So he's coming up like really quick. I got to finish writing that guy. Usually, I would try to stay at least a few episodes ahead writing-wise and about this far ahead reading-wise. My summer was just crazy busy, wedding, new job, moving, COVID, all the things.
Just those little things, you know.
Just minor life events.
Congratulations on some of those.
So I'm like, oh man, I need to, what's that?
Congratulations on some of those, by the way. Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Thank
Absolutely.
You. Yeah. So I'm trying to rebuild my buffer and find time to rebuild the buffer. But what I like to do is when I'm reading, like way ahead, I'm taking notes the whole time and I'm, you know, marking the book. And those notes almost kind of form the outline of the episode. And then when I get to writing it, I'll look at the notes and I'll look at additional sources where I get questions and I'll write the first draft. And then when it comes time to record it, usually a month has passed or so, and then I'll give it basically a final proof where I'm like, okay, this doesn't make sense. Let me fix that. Let me clarify this. This doesn't look right. And then I'll record it. So that's kind of the lead time I try to build myself. And then I also try to book, I do a lot of historian interviews now. And so I try to book those in advance because those are, you know, busy people. Some are harder to get than others. And so I just try to get on their radar as soon as possible. But again, that's something where I'm a little behind schedule of where I'd like to be. So that's on my to-do for today, is to reach out to some historians and get some interviews scheduled. But yeah, good question. Thank you. So that wraps up the questions that we had. This was a really fun presidential podcast Friendsgiving spectacular. But before I let you go, let's surprise round. What is everybody's, give me either your favorite Thanksgiving food or tradition. Give me something Thanksgiving related, your favorite food or tradition. Whoever is ready.
I'll jump in for everybody. So Thanksgiving, you know, a holiday all about food. I mean, let's just ignore the troubling history of the holiday.
Yes.
Right. We're putting that to the side. We're putting that on the shelf. I love the fact that it's, you know, it's a communal holiday about food, or at least that's what I choose to make it about. So I hate cooking. You could ask my husband. He has to be the chef in the household because I don't like the pinch of this and the dash of this and season to taste because I don't have any taste. So, but Thanksgiving is my day to shine. I love to cook. I love to make all of the things. And so I make a pretty dang good pecan pie. It gets requested every year. My mom is, you know, she'll be calling me the first week of November. You're still going to make the pecan pie, right? You're still going to make the pecan pie, right? So even if we don't spend the holiday together, because sometimes, you know, she goes and does other things and we're not always together on the holiday, but I am always on the hook for pecan pie. So I say that that's my favorite tradition / food.
See, Alicia, you and I are kind of on the same wavelength because I can bake, but if it comes to cooking, you know, my husband, he can look at a recipe have not prepared it, just look at the recipe, and he's like, oh, yeah, we're going to take that out, we're going to add in this, and oh, I think it needs a little more of this, and I'm like, what are you doing? We don't even know what it tastes like. He's like, it's going to be fine, okay? And I've learned over the years, just trust him. Yes, it's going to be good. Just go to the grocery store because he hates going grocery shopping. So I can do that. I'll get you the supplies. Here you go. But one of my favorite things to make for Thanksgiving is potato salad. And, you know, growing up in the South, that is one of pretty much any holiday, you've got to have potato salad. And I have a recipe that came from my mom and my aunt, and I don't know where it came from for them, but whenever I think back over the years, for every holiday, I remember that potato salad being there. And I actually, unfortunately, lost my mom in 2005. And so it's one of those dishes that whenever I make it, I think of her, and it's like she's here with us. So it's definitely a favorite of mine.
Mm. Yeah.
Howard?
Thanksgiving, this gives me an opportunity to shout out to my wife and co-host, Jess, who really makes our show, I think. Last year, Jess's aunt usually has Thanksgiving, but she was recovering from surgery. So we actually took on Thanksgiving for almost 20 people or something for the first time ever. And it was awesome. We loved it. It was a lot of work. It takes a long time and a lot of work to heat up a turkey that you bought pre-cooked and frozen from the grocery store. I didn't know that even that would be work. We kept waiting on that turkey, and it just was not hot enough yet. But everything, I love all the Thanksgiving stuff. I love stuffing. I love the dark meat on the turkey. And yeah, I mean, there's nothing like pumpkin pie with some whipped cream. It just says Thanksgiving to me.
Do you make it or do you buy it?
I eat it and I don't ask questions.
Yeah. No you questions. Don't care about
good answer.
No yeah. Nice. Yeah, my family seems to have like an unofficial tradition of finding a new way to ruin the turkey every year. We have had turkeys that were so overcooked, it was like red and you couldn't cut into it. We've had turkeys that were so bloody, they practically walked out of the oven, you know? So we always seem to find a new way to do the cooked turkey wrong. So I'll say my favorite part, other than laughing at that in hindsight every year, is I'm a big college football fan, so I love all the games. I love the rivalry weekend. I love going when I get a chance to go. So that's probably my favorite, just like relaxing with my brother, with my family, and watching some football. So, yeah.
And at the risk of alienating some of your other college football fans who are also listeners, who do you root for?
Oh, yeah. My alma mater, Texas A&M, the Fighting Texas Aggies, who I'm sure by the time this is published will be like undefeated, probably number one in the country. Well, you know, I'm probably like looking at my tickets to the national title game. I'm quite confident that we won't have collapsed after losing to Appalachian State or anything like that.
Not at all.
Not at all.
My friend, she lives along the Gulf Coast, and so she I have to represent her and say roll tide for Alabama. Sorry.
Oh, that's great. We beat them.
You at really don't wedding. Have to say that. as somebody who grew up just south of Baton Rouge, go
oh,
Tigers.
Sorry.
Go Tigers. There you go. There you go. At my wedding in May, I had fun at the welcome dinner teasing the Alabama fans in the audience by saying thank you, everyone, for gathering here to celebrate Texas A&M's victory over Alabama last year. It was really fun. I'm so great. And then we did like little bingo cards, you know, for like getting people talking to each other. And so like some of the boxes, one of the boxes was like, alma mater lost to Kansas last year, and that was from my Longhorn friends, who I just took so much pleasure in putting that on there. Cool. Well, hey guys, this was a lot of fun. Thank you so much for coming together for this. As a quick reminder to our listeners of whose podcasts are out there and where you can find them, Howard Dorey is the host of Plotting Through the Presidents, Alicia is the host of Civics and Coffee, and Jerry Landry is the host of Presidencies of the United States, and I'm the host of Abridged Presidential Histories. I hope you'll give all these podcasts a listen. As you can tell, they're all fantastic, fun people. So, thank you. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody, from September.
Thank you for putting this together, Kenny. Thank you.
The Battle of Waterloo was one of the most famous turning points in world history. But what happened next? My name's David Montgomery, and I'm the host of The Siecle, a history podcast that tackles exactly that. Join me as I cover France's overlooked century in between Napoleon and World War I. The Siecle, spelled S-I-E-C-L-E, is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network and can be found wherever you get podcasts.